Economic Alliance presents the Gulf Coast Growth Show, your show for the coast with the most growth, with your host, Jason Lee and Clint Aiken.
And we are live, and welcome to the Gulf Coast Growth Show, your
show for the coast with the most growth.
Right, and I am Jason Lee, your host, and my co-host,
Clint Aiken.
And we are here with George Parrott. Correct? I got it right? Okay, fantastic. And George is with ISTC, and he represents, and we're here to talk about safety today. And ironically, it's National Safety Week, so we teed this up perfectly. And so we're going to talk about...
It was a happy accident. I wouldn't say we teed it up perfectly.
Huh?
It was a happy accident.
A happy accident, but we nailed it. So that's usually how these things work. So we're excited to have George here to discuss safety, all things safety today. But before we dive into a little bit about his background and jump into the agenda, let's quickly acknowledge our sponsors, and then Absolutely. We'll jump right in.
So we definitely want to thank the Industrial Safety Training Council. I appreciate George being here. McDonough Engineering Corporation and Turner Industries are other two sponsors. So thank you.
Thanks, Turner. Diving in real quick. So, George, give us a quick backdrop for our audience so they understand who you are, what you do, and kind of what qualifies you to be on here talking about safety today.
I represent the Industrial Safety Training Council, and it's an organization that's been around for probably 28 years now. Developed right after the Phillips explosion here in Pasadena in, what was that, 1991? Back in the day when OSHA was first developed, Nixon actually produced something called process safety management in the OSHA regulations, but it was never adopted until they had the Bhopal accident in India that's killed like 3,500 people from a chemical release. And then when Pasadena exploded, everyone just kind of threw their hands up and said, it's time to go ahead and get ahead of this in safety and get serious about it. And that's how the safety councils were formed.
Wow, okay, fantastic. And then your history, just from a kind of a background.
My history, I actually started with the council back when I worked for a company at Entergy, doing a lot of business development work for the power group as a volunteer. At the time it was the organization was being developed, some of the plants, specifically Texaco over in Port Arthur, Texas, came up and said, look, we're going to get ahead of this process safety management. And they really started rolling the ball. And then it was like, well, rather than every plant do their own program, let's go ahead and do one that put it to an organization and have it share the same knowledge base across the industrial petrochemical space.
Fantastic.
And that's how we were born.
Awesome. That's great to hear. So we have an agenda. We want to talk about the history. So where did we come from? Where we come to today? We're going to highlight a little bit about our standards. So really what separates us from the other industries. I think you're going to share a little bit of information.
Absolutely.
I think it might be surprising for a lot of folks of really just how good we're doing out here in our region. And then at the same time, we're going to talk about the future. Where are we going with safety and what kind of trends and what direction you think things are taking place? So with that being said, why don't we dive into the history of safety here in the petrochem region? So Walt, but you've been involved 28 years. So going back to 28 years ago to what you've seen and where we've come, shed a little light on that.
Okay. And this is kind of some interesting stuff because it's more of the history of process safety in Southeast Texas. But back in 91, when Phillips exploded, I took some records. I went back and pulled some records on recordable accidents. And this is just one plant to give you an example of how dangerous these chemical or petrochemical units were. And that one plant in Port Arthur had a recordable rate of 565 accidents in 1 year.
Wow.
Now, it's important to kind of point out that even back then, it wasn't just the same accidents we have now where people have sprains or, you know, twist their back or twist their ankles. These were amputations. These were crushes. These were hydroblasting accidents where you got water injected into your bodies. These were some serious, serious accidents. And so that kind of was the impetus to develop the safety council when my boss, a Turner Industries exec, came in and said, what do we need to do to stop killing people? And
wow.
That's been our mantra through ISTC for the past 28 years. What do we need to do to stop killing people?
Right.
So we came up and started implementing process safety management. And immediately, the numbers started declining. So much so that right now you're looking at probably a 96% reduction in recordable rates since we initially started the program.
That's huge.
It's impressive.
Yeah.
But we still have a little ways to go. So that's why you see all these companies with their towards zero, absolute zero. They're always driving towards zero accidents. There's still a ways to go. For example, on the number I quoted earlier, we started at 585. The lowest number we got was 32 back in 2013. But now we've kind of run about 50 accidents per year.
Wow.
So there's still a little room to grow.
Right.
Fantastic.
That's a significant reduction. So most of the people that are going into work, into these plants, they're going home safely every day.
Absolutely.
Of the year. So, you know, that's, I think that's one of the big takeaways is, you know, if you're looking to get into this industry, one of the big concerns would be, oh, am I going to go home? And that number has definitely improved dramatically. So I guess one of the questions I've got, kind of shifting gears a little bit, as far as OSHA rankings go, how does the petrochem industry rank against other industries that aren't petrochem?
Let me give you an interesting story to that. I'm glad you asked that question. I would take this information and the same parts of the same topic that we're discussing today, and I would start at the at the field level with the safety guys, and I'd work it through a bunch of different channels and throughout the industry, and eventually took it to the corporate headquarters. And the corporate headquarters said, "Oh my God, that's really good. What can you do for the oil field side?" I said, "Well, how bad is it?" And to give you an example, specific. If you work at a refinery today, any company that comes and work in a refinery today, you have to have what's called an experience modifier rate of less than one. So most of the companies like Turner Industries and things like that have EMRs and probably in the neighborhood of 0.6, 0.7. That's a minimum requirement to go to work inside these plants. You go to the oil field in November, we were in Midland, and they were celebrating the EMR rate for the drilling rigs at 3.5.
Wow.
So you made you stop and think, are drilling rigs really three times more dangerous than the refineries? Probably not. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done. So actually you can see a trend now of process safety management going up through the midstream program, you know, heading towards the oil field. Another fun example was I was giving a speech in Baltimore, Maryland on the same topic. And one of the gentlemen said, "I will give you a ticket to fly to Los Angeles if you give this speech to the Hospital Association." And it was like, "What's the speech about?" And he goes, "Talk about how if you could make refineries safer, what can hospitals do to make hospitals safer?" Hmm. And it was a very interesting discussion. But again, it's all about the commitment. Refineries found out back in the 90s that, yeah, it was a dangerous place to work and were committed to the fact that we're going to clean up our act, we're going to make our places safer to encourage new people coming in. Hospitals aren't at that point right now.
It's interesting.
Yeah. Wow. For example, I mean, if you go to a plant now, they'll share accidents with all the other people in the room. At a hospital, they're going to do everything they can to cover it up.
Well, they're worried about getting sued.
Correct.
So
correct. And plants are as well. But yet, everyone learns from everyone else's mistakes.
Right. None of us is as smart as all of us.
Correct.
No, that's a great one. Let me ask you, from an industry perspective, I think I read or heard somewhere that it's surprising how low from an OSHA perspective that, like, when they talk about the most dangerous jobs, where we rank, that there's jobs that people go and do every single day that actually are more likely at being at risk or being at harm.
Oh, absolutely.
That you lose sight of, right? Because they don't involve a hard hat, they don't involve work boots, and they don't involve, you know, flames and all the crazy stuff happening out there that you drive by and you're like, "Oh my gosh, I bet that's crazy dangerous." But there's probably tons of people on the roads looking over there that their job's twice as dangerous and they're more at risk.
Oh, well,
do you know of any of the, surprise our audience with some of those jobs that would catch them off guard?
Piece of cake. What's the name of it? It's called the deadliest catch for a reason.
Oh, yeah.
A safety guy watching the deadliest catch cringes on a regular basis. And Mike Rowe, the host of it, and I'll, you know, encourage your listeners to kind of look this up. But the host of it was seeing accidents occurring on a regular basis and finally worked up the nerve to ask the captain, hey, captain, you know, have you guys ever heard of OSHA? And this is a quote from his speech, but the captain goes, OSHA? No, sir. OSHA. My job is not to keep you safe. My job is to make you money.
Wow.
It's your job to be safe.
I am so glad our plants don't have that attitude.
That's correct. But I actually said that at a speech at a plant one time, and they were not happy that I brought that up. But nonetheless, it's a valuable lesson that, you know, safety begins with yourself.
And for those of us that are watching on Facebook Live, if you want to make a comment about that, we'd love to hear your input as well. If you work in the plants and, you know, if you've seen any safety initiatives, anything that's been driven that's made an impact in your life or helped you got home safer on a daily basis, please put a comment in. We'd love to hear about that.
Absolutely. And you're always welcome to, after the fact, tune into the show or stay on Facebook. And always, if something comes to mind, you want to communicate or get in contact with George, you can always work through us and we can help align that for you or give you some feedback from our organization. So we're always happy to do that as well. So that's great. And I think it's really exciting to see when you look at the work that's going on behind the scenes. I was surprised when you shared the numbers. It blew my mind earlier. But where are we going, right? Because I think anytime there's an accident, something that happens out in this area and it captures the attention of folks, a lot of times there's this giant, there's huge flag that gets raised, right? And everybody's
absolutely
concerned.
Spotlight.
So there's a spotlight, right?
Right.
So there's a spotlight.
Spotlight's on us in a big way right now.
In a big way right now. And but I'd love to kind of educate the audience on the things that are in place, not only right now, but what things do you see out in the forefront that are going to help bring these numbers down and really help improve not only safety
trends,
but the trends and the communication trends that are taking place.
Well, that and another thing for those people sending in comments, I mean, this is a collaborative effort. Every time I go out and I give probably 60 or 70 of these talks around the country on a yearly basis, and the companies that I represent, the 74 petrochemical plants, you know, mostly global companies, they all love to get the feedback from the field level, from what I'm hearing, you know, in the audience. For example, well, I'll share some examples with you guys in just a second on some of these emerging trends that I just finished at the Region 6 VPP conference over in Oklahoma City. But one of the big ones that's really kind of impacting and rotating around Southeast Texas right now is the result of the three accidents that we had in the last month. Exxon had a fire and explosion. Of course, the ITC explosion and all the monkey business that went on around there. And then the accident or fatality accident in Crosby has really captured those 1, 2, 3 in a row really captured the national attention.
And they're not reflective of the industry. It's just they kind of all happened at the same time.
It was a series of unfortunate events that happened at one time.
Right.
But immediately raised the ire of some of the representatives on Capitol Hill that said, wait a minute, what's going on? What do we need to do to address these issues? So now you've got Washington really looking into it. So you can bet that it's going to start coming down pretty soon that something needs to be done. So thankfully, the industries in Southeast Texas and, you know, in the petrochemical industry are really getting out ahead of it. So much so they're coming up with some new emerging trends in background screening, for example. They're really taking a look now to make sure that everybody who enters their property is credentialed to be on that property. And that means having a complete background screen versus just one that, well, you know, for you guys, when was the last time y'all had a background check?
I'll play the fifth.
Well,
it was actually fairly recent.
Mostly when you get hired, you know,
right.
That's when the
company
issues
you get
your background check.
But they don't stay on top of it.
Correct.
Right.
And so what's happening is that, well, yes, a lot of these people that are driving onto these, you know, industrial plants did a background check back when they got hired into the company. But, you know, we're not really sure that that's who they are and if they've, you know, walked the straight and narrow since then. So new things like making sure that every person has a background screen. A TWIC card is not a background check. That was a misconception that we kind of really brought to light in this VPP meeting that we had just this week. that everyone in the room thought if you had a TWIC card, you had to provide your fingerprints, and that gave you, you know, a clear background check. That's not the case. A TWIC card just identifies you in the fingerprint database at the federal level. It doesn't say whether you've got something, you know, on your record or not.
Right.
So there have literally been people with felonies on their records being issued TWIC cards to go to work in the plants.
Wow. That's interesting.
So now people are really looking at making sure that the background data is what it says it is. And there's a lot of new things coming out around that. Another one, before I came back to work at ISTC, I was working over in Asia building a couple of chemical plants. And over there, everything is biometrically driven.
Okay.
To operate a forklift, you put your thumbprint on as a key. It immediately bills the company that I work for. So that's, it pays for itself. But it also checks to make sure that I'm qualified to use that piece of equipment. It bounces against the database. In this case, it was Yokogawa who had the database. But as long as I, had a current record and I had a current background screen and I met all the criteria for the plant, it allowed me to turn that engine on.
Interesting.
It gets crazy. because you thumbprint to get into the facility. You thumbprint to get out of the facility. You thumbprint to get your lunch. You thumbprint to check out a tool. You thumbprint to go into the restroom.
Wow.
You thumbprint to get out of the restroom.
Wow.
And I asked that question, why? And they said, well, when you go into the restroom and you thumbprint, the clock stops. So they're not going to pay you for that. You thumbprint to get out, the clock starts again.
Wow.
So that little break time that all the employees are taking in the men's room, is now being taken off the clock. And it justified, biometrics, just to give you an example of how valuable it was, saved one company $289,400 in 1 month.
That's in 1 month?
In 1 month.
Wow, that's significant.
Of time, what they would consider to be overcharges. And so now you've got companies like Johnny on the Spots and United coming in, not United Rentals, but United porta potties coming in and saying, can we put these things on our porta potties? It's like, I really don't know anything about that. That's Convergent that's really running that show.
Right.
But they're moving into Southeast Texas in a big way. Compliance is going to be the watchword for the next few years.
Wonderful. Yeah, it's interesting how bad things happen in threes. I think that expands across all.
Oh, absolutely.
It's mind-blowing how it happens like that. I was laughing because – not laughing, but I was laughing as you said the detail in regards to how they're managing work in and work out, because I just read an article yesterday around Amazon and their warehouses and the technology that they use to help keep people on task and move forward and manage their productivity so they continue to push out. And it's all driven by data and reporting and stuff. And it's, if you think about a company that's excelling to the bottom line and doing great work, that's a big one. So imagine taking that over and applying it to safety and using where the future's going to keep us safe. It sounds like some really exciting stuff.
Oh, it's all about the fourth industrial revolution.
There you go.
Well, we'll talk about that a little bit more after a break.
Yep.
I'm going to interrupt.
Yep.
Because we need to recognize our sponsors. ISTC, the Industrial Safety and Training Council, is proud to support this podcast. ISTC, the nation's leading industrial workforce compliance organization, is committed to the safety of our petrochemical plants, pipelines, and their contractors. You can drop them a line at #IAmSafety. We want to thank McDonough Engineering Corporation. McDonough Engineering Corporation is a full-service engineering firm specializing in industrial site design, including tank terminals, truck loading facilities, and manufacturing and distribution facilities. They are proud supporters of the Economic Alliance, Houston Port Region, and the podcast. You can check them out at mectx.com. We also want to thank Turner Industries. For over 55 years, Turner Industry employees across the Gulf Coast and beyond have answered the country's toughest industrial challenges. They provide one solution for your success with industrial construction, maintenance, turnaround, pipe and module fabrication, equipment, rigging, and specialized transportation, and associated specialty services. You can learn more at turner-industries.com. A couple announcements that are coming up. We want to Economic Alliance Houston-Port Region has their procurement breakfast. That is on Tuesday, June 17th from 7 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. You can go to their website to learn more about
June
that.
June 18th.
Oh, June 18th.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
No worries.
You can go to their website, learn a little bit more about that. Definitely register. If you're a member of the Economic Alliance or a BIC Alliance, you actually get in for free. So you definitely want to take advantage of that. That's one of your perks of being a member. If you're not a member of those organizations, definitely look into it. We also want to recognize the Houston Area Safety Council. They'll have their annual safety award show in Galveston on Friday, May 17th, starting at 6 p.m. You can learn more by going to hasc.com. That's the Houston Area Safety Council website. That's right, isn't it?
H-O-U-B-R, the Houston Business Roundtable.
Oh, they have it also.
Sponsors it.
Right, they have it also.
It's a huge event. It's great.
Right.
Nice.
So if you can check that out, go check that out. And so we'll move on now.
Fantastic. Well, we got a few minutes left, and we usually try to dive into a little bit about the guy that joined us today. And we'll do that here in a second to learn more about you. But is there anything that you wanted to capture as we round up safety and leave our audience with as kind of a significant takeaway before we shift gears?
Yeah, there was, like I said, this week is Safety Week. And with that, there was a lot of different conferences and meetings going on around the country. And I was blessed to go out and actually work with three of them just this week alone. And one of the things I wanted to bring up kind of falls along with the security that we were just talking about and emerging trends. And I was amazed at the response, both positive and negative, that this issue brought up. And it's all about locational awareness. A lot of the plants are looking into new ways because you got such a younger workforce coming in. When I started back in the late 80s at a refinery, I had a guy named Frank who I literally was tied at the hip with for 6 months. And Frank told me exactly what to do and what not to do and where these things were and where they weren't. Nowadays, you're lucky to have somebody mentor you that's been there, you know, 6 weeks.
Sure.
You know, to sit there and show you how to do things. So the plants are looking at new and innovative ways to make their refineries and petrochemical plants a little more accessible to new people. One of the things they're looking at is called locational awareness. Honeywell, Emerson, 3M, you name it. There are hundreds of companies in these meetings this week that are all coming out with some iteration of RFID tagging. And it's a volatile discussion, but it's all around productivity. For example, one of the gentlemen threw up on his presentation that there was an aggregation of probably 15 or 20 tags, you know, in this one area at a plant because we were looking at it in real time.
Right.
And it was like, okay. Well, we looked at the time. It was noon. And we found out that these were all people aggregating around the microwave oven that they had at the plant to heat their lunches. As time progressed and we went on to look for other clusters of RFID tags, they would find them in the middle of boxes in a warehouse. And I said, well, what is this? And there were 24 tags all milling around inside what would normally be a set of empty boxes or packed product. It was a hooch that they had built out in there that people would go in there and hide or take a break. So they were immediately turned to, let's show you how much money these RFID tags are saving in productivity. And one of the companies threw out a number of $164,130 that they recovered and lost productivity just from RFID tagging.
And what was the time period on that? Do you know? Is that
probably a month.
Wow, that's significant too.
But hopefully it was a very big warehouse company or a very big chemical plant, but there's some more information on that. But the thing is that as the workforce comes in as newer and newer, these locational awareness features really do play an important part.
Right.
For example, when I worked at Mobil back in the day, you had A, B, C, D, E streets and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 avenues to where you could figure out what unit you were going to.
Right.
Well, that was in the 70s and 80s. Those signs are now gone.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's like when we're going to send somebody new out to a A1 unit, you know, it's like, well, I'm sorry, sir, how do I find that? Well, now they've got these locational awareness tags that are directing people directly into those tags using radio frequency signals.
Wow.
So some awesome stuff that's coming out.
I'll honestly admit, I've been inside some of the plants and I've gotten lost.
Yeah.
I was supposed to go to this unit and there were no signs. I didn't know which unit. I'd never been in there before. I didn't have a guide with me. And so I've gotten lost inside the plants.
If I go in a plant, I'm never coming out. So that's just, trust me. That's
well,
not happening.
I worked on a project with the Navy and I was actually in the weapons area in on an aircraft carrier. And they kept watching me walk around in circles, and literally 2.5 hours later, I was lost.
Mm-hmm.
And then I heard over the loudspeaker, George Parrott, sit down. And I literally sat on the floor, and they came up to find me. I said, how in the heck did you guys find me? He says, we've been watching for the last 2 hours, you walking around in circles trying to find your way out. I said, oh, so I'm tagged? He goes, absolutely. Everyone over the crew members are tagged.
That's funny. So I'm laughing because I know somewhere right now there's some new kid wandering around, and everybody's in the somewhere just laughing, going, look at the dude walking around in circles.
Absolutely.
I think one thing that I really heard if we were to back and just capture a few things was where we've come from and where we're at. You know, I think one thing that really stood out was when you started 30 years ago, I heard 565 accidents. This is one plan as a snapshot, all the way down to 65, 30 years later.
95% reduction.
And then you shared some of the places that we're going, which then highlighted that there's still some gaps. But from an industry perspective, if you think about how we can close those gaps and the tools that are in place, it sounds like we're really taking an aggressive approach to really get to that zero number, or at least make that something that, you know, someday somebody might just make that happen. It sounds
absolutely
like it's out there in the forefront, which is really exciting to think about. So we've got a few more minutes, so we're going to close out here in a second. But Clint, I'll let you drive the – you've known George a little bit longer. Why don't you just maybe share a little bit about what we want to know about George and what he's done and what got him here. So actually, I just did that.
Yeah, thanks.
There you go.
I mean, the main question.
Yeah.
Good luck with that.
Damn.
Yeah, George is a great guy. Whenever I head down to the Beaumont area, I always try and grab lunch with him and meet with him. He's just always got great insight. Anytime I'm at a networking event, I like talking to George because he's always got great insight. So, George, where do you – I guess I do have a quick question. Where do you get your inspiration from? Do you read books? What keeps you motivated? You mentioned mentors.
I have spent my entire career growing the industrial sector.
Yeah.
And that is my vision, is everywhere I go, and I've worked for some great companies. I mean, everything from the world's largest, you know, oil companies, drilling companies, all the way to the National Football League. It's how do you grow the business incrementally? And not only that, but when I leave the project or the project gets completed, that I want to see come back 2 or 3 years later and see sustainable growth going on.
Right.
Nice.
And that's what drives me every day, is I want to come back a year later and see something better than when I left it.
That's awesome.
And I make something better than when it started.
Yeah, it's great.
Sounds like you've already had a huge impact with that. And the one thing that, you know, I think a lot of people don't hear safety as growth, but it 100% is growth, because I think of the term two steps forward and one step back. Well, safety is really, when done wrong, can be three steps back, right? And so I think it's really important to understand the dynamic of its impact and what you guys are doing to help not only grow the region, because industry is only coming. And especially in this region, if you look at what's happening, the job growth, we had everybody who's been on here to discuss workforce development has said, everything is poised over the next 4 to 5 years for us to see huge spikes in this. And then to keep us all safe along the way, helps the rest of the folks out there sleep better at night. And we do appreciate the hard work that you guys put into that. So
if anybody out there knows how to monetize safety, I mean, that would be a godsend, you know, to help move the industry along.
Right. It's hard to measure it. I worked for a company. We tried to
look
at how you measure fewer accidents. You can't necessarily measure a negative, right?
Yeah.
Correct.
If you make somebody, if you got a guy that's been going to work and he's been safe for the whole year, how can you measure that the next year you're going to make him even safer? It's a hard thing to figure out. And if you figure that out, comment below and I will directly reach out to you and we will make some money.
Take these tagging devices that they're putting on these guys in the plants. and then let their wives keep them on their husbands for an extra $50 a month EFT. I'll figure out how to make safety money.
I told you it was a very contentious debate.
Yeah.
And that's probably one reason why.
Right. Here, you can tune in and watch from home, honey. So, you know what? I tell you, I think we're wrapping up. So as we get ready to close out with our gratitude, Glenn, I'll let you go first.
Awesome. You know, this week we've had a lot of bad weather, and I'm really grateful for our civil servants that get out there during the bad weather and get people home safely, for our fire departments, our police department, and any other civil servants that are out there working hard on our behalf that we don't even realize they're there. But thank you. Thank you for being there. Thank you for keeping us safe. You know, thank you for your sacrifices to help ensure that we get home every day.
Nice. I want to thank I'm grateful and thankful for really Houston and its dynamic diversity as far as what we bring from an industrial perspective and the growth and opportunities that exist. Every time OTC is in town, I was in a restaurant last night and it was wall to wall, people to people, places stacked, and there was cars just lined up and down the roads, the Galleria. And then I was reminded of what all that does for our economy. With these big giant trade shows that come in because of the industry that's happened in our region. It's easy to forget that. But when I walked out of there last night, I thought, man, this is amazing because most of these people in here probably don't live here, but that's great because those bartenders were making great money. The people out there in the roads were making great money. The people that were serving those individuals. So it's really exciting to see and exciting to be a part of.
Well, it keeps the world's focus on Houston as the, you know, energy capital of the world. I mean,
yep.
We're the leader in offshore technology. We're the leader in petrochemicals. You know, Houston's the, you know, the center of the energy industry.
Yeah, right. Exciting stuff. So, George, we want to thank you. Thanks for making Safety Week a great one, and we do appreciate it. So next week, guys, you can tune in. Again, if you have questions, you can always give us feedback. Tune into the show. Chime in. Leave us comments. Next week, we're going to have Glenn Royal on talking a little bit about community, what's happening in the region. Glenn comes with a tremendous experience. He serves on the board here at the Economic Alliance and has been in the political realm of the Seabrook in that region. So we're really excited to have him on the show next week. And so stay tuned, 12 p.m. next Friday. Thanks, and you guys have a great week.
Appreciate it. Come back. Bye.
Economic Alliance thanks you for tuning in to the Gulf Coast Growth Show. Be sure to subscribe to the YouTube channel and share with your friends.